Welcome to Parents' Perspective. What are these? Brad looked at the profusion of brightly colored papers on the kitchen table. I downloaded these during Connor's nap, Melanie explained. I just went on the internet to look up early walking, and there's all this other stuff. She waved her hand. I don't know what we should be doing with him. Well, for starters, I don't think he's ready to be toilet trained. Brad picked up one of the pages, so we can dispense with these. But what about this early reading method? Melanie pointed to another set of papers. They say you can even teach babies to read. Brad grimaced. I don't think so. Connor's got a full schedule with his playmat, his stuffed animals, and his blocks, not to mention our walks in the stroller and his nap. I don't think he can fit in any more right now. He grinned at Melanie. We can see if some free time opens up in the next couple of years. Well, Melanie sighed, I just don't want to be depriving him of anything so early. From a parent's perspective, what should we know about children's developmental touch points for the 21st century? I'm Sandy Burt.
And I'm Linda Perlis. We're happy to welcome back two long-term friends of Parents' Perspective who can share with us answers to some developmental questions about raising our children. Dr. T. Barry Brazelton, founder of the Child Development Unit at Children's Hospital, Boston, is clinical professor of pediatrics emeritus at Harvard Medical School and professor of pediatrics and human development at Brown University. A famed advocate for children, he also is the father of four and the grandfather of seven. Welcome back to Parents' Perspective, Dr. Brazelton.
Well, it's great to be here.
Dr. Joshua D. Sparrow, child psychiatrist and supervisor of outpatient psychiatry at Children's Hospital Boston, is assistant professor of psychiatry at Harvard Medical School. He's co-author with Dr. Brazelton of Touch Points, 3 to 6, and all the titles in the Brazelton Way series. He also revised with Dr. Brazelton the original Touch Points, Birth to 3, Your Child's Emotional and Behavioral Development. He has a grown daughter and son. We're so glad you can be with us again, Dr. Sparrow.
Thank you so much for having us back.
So both of you have been dealing with young children and their families for many years. What changes have you seen in parenting?
Well, there's a lot more stress on parents today. There are about 12 stresses that we've identified that are greater than they were when I was raising my children.
What are some of those stresses?
Both parents are working. Parents are having to live away from their own families. They are often isolated and raising children by themselves, which is very difficult. Poverty, I think, is increasing with the downturn.
Isn't that enough?
That's a lot. Sure is.
Are parents overwhelmed by the advice that they're getting? Is there more advice out there than there used to be?
I was going to say that I think one of the big changes for parents is that parents used to learn about being a parent and learn about their children from their mothers or their mother-in-laws or their aunts or their siblings, the people around them that they were connected to. And now it seems as if, partly because families move around more and are more isolated, but also because the information through mass media is so much more powerfully available, that there's just all of this information that comes from much farther away. And so it's harder to know, I think, what's relevant and what makes sense for your own family when it's coming through the internet or through the so-called experts, because you can't really tell if it's about you and your children and your family and your culture. So I think that's a huge challenge for parents, and I think it ends up making parents feel less certain and less confident in themselves, and as if there are all of these people who know except for me.
What would you tell parents who are sitting there feeling very inadequate and wondering what to do?
If you watch and listen to your baby and to your child, your baby's behavior, your child's behavior will be your guide. And if you pay attention to your own instincts, that's where you'll find the kind of family you want to be, the kind of child you want to raise, the kind of world you want to raise your child for.
Parents really have it within themselves, and if they get reinforced for it, they learn from watching their baby how to be a parent.
There seems to be an increasing push these days toward early skills acquisition. We see it all over the place, particularly applied to reading. How do you feel about programs that purport to teach babies to read and that kind of stuff?
There's a lot of evidence that young children don't really learn very much from two-dimensional screens, so that the programs that use videos or computers that are being marketed for children under the age of 30 months probably aren't doing very much except taking advantage of parents' anxiety for for their sales, I'm afraid to say. And I think one of the other concerns is that there's plenty of time for children to read. And there may be some children who, if you watch them and listen to them, express a real interest and a real desire, and it's great to respond to that. But other children who aren't ready at two or three, and many won't be, will be ready a year or two or three later. And if you push them before they're ready, they'll feel like failures, and they'll get discouraged, and they may get burned out and turned off from leading a channel. But the other thing is, I think, what's the hurry? And I think we are living in an increasingly lopsided world where we're very focused on language and words and the spoken word and the written word, and yet human beings really can't function and survive if we don't develop all kinds of other capacities. So if we push hard in one area of skill acquisition when children are very young, it may be at the expense of the others that they're more ready for developmentally.
We'll take a short break now and be right back to continue our discussion on developmental touchpoints for the 21st century.
The popular new book, Raising a Successful Child, Discover and Nurture Your Child's Talents, by Sandra Burt and Linda Perlis, is available at all major bookstores and on the web.
Welcome back to Parents' Perspective. We are talking with Dr. T. Barry Brazelton and Dr. Joshua D. Sparrow about developmental touchpoints for the 21st century.
Are there developmental touchpoints that indicate readiness for certain skill acquisitions?
Yeah, I think there are.
How can we tell?
Well, I think children indicate when they're ready. They learn by imitation, by modeling. The readiness is within. They're born ready to pick up on social imitation and social referencing. At a point where they're ready to start something, they'll start doing it themselves.
Would you clarify what touch points are?
Well, you made up the term.
It's a Brazelton term.
That's right. These are times just before a child takes a burst in development, when he regresses, falls apart, won't eat, won't sleep, becomes irritable, and falls apart, and the parents fall apart with him. And so that's a time when the parents are very vulnerable for influences that we can offer them or for support that we're offering them. So if we're there to give them the kind of support they need, then the next touch point, when it takes off, the baby feels, wow, I just did it. And the parents feel like, I know what I'm doing. So each touch point, and there are six of these in the first year and three or four each year after that, each touch point becomes an opportunity for entering the parent-child system and giving them a kind of support they need to feel like, wow, I just learned how to parent.
It seems like we're on this sort of push for early this and early that and early the next thing. What would you tell parents about that?
Well, I think in a general way, the early push for all kinds of learning is based on a misunderstanding about the so-called brain science, a lot of which actually is not that new. There's a lot of really exciting research going on now, but a lot of what this push is based on is a couple of decades old now. So because children's brains are developing so dramatically, actually before they're born and during the first 3 years and to a great extent also in the next 3 years, there's this misunderstanding that that means that we have to push them to learn things that actually their brains are programmed to be ready to learn later on. So the point is not that we have to teach them all kinds of things that they don't need to know and that they're not ready to know when they're 3 years old or under, but that we need to optimize the opportunities for learning what they are ready to learn. And most of what they're ready to learn is about how to be in relationships with other people. And that actually, for most of us, is the most complicated thing we ever have to learn.
The concept of co-sleeping or the family bed, that seems to be back again too, re-emerging. Do you have some thoughts on that?
Well, again, this is nothing new. It's actually what most families have done for most of human history around the world. And it really has been only during a very brief period and only in a small number of cultures, really starting, I think, sometime in the 19th century and mostly in Anglo-Saxon cultures where this concept of isolating babies from their parents at night came up. So it's really been around for a long, long time. What Dr. Brazelton always says, though, if you're going to co-sleep, you need to know what you're getting yourself into, which is you can decide to do it, but it's your baby who's going to decide when they're ready to stop.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
Your baby may be there for years, right?
That's right. You better be prepared for what you're up to later.
We haven't really talked about this a lot, but it comes up constantly, and that's when parents are training kids to eat, quote, nutritiously, and dessert is sometimes used as a reward and all that kind of stuff. Has there been any change in that?
One of the unfortunate things about the way we think about food and healthy eating is, at least in the mainstream American culture, we think about our bodies as machines and as food as the fuel. And I think that's interferes actually with our just paying attention to the signals that our body is set up to give us in response to what we're eating. We're so far removed from those signals that we don't pay attention to how much we're eating and what we're eating to know when we've had enough. And so I think this whole move towards labeling foods with calories and nutrient contents is out of a very good intent because people need to know what they're eating, particularly because with processed food, you often have no idea. On the other hand, our bodies weren't really set up to figure out what to eat on the basis of those labels. Instead, we get hormonal cues based on what we're putting into our bodies that tell us if we need more of this or more of that, or if we've had enough or if we've had too much. And those don't really come through to us if we're overly focused on what we've measured out. And then for dessert, to make it a reward or a punishment or a good thing or a bad thing is also an interference with children learning what their bodies are telling them about what they need to eat.
I always like to tell the story of one of my grandsons when he turned 1 year old. It seems to be customary to give them a cupcake or a piece of birthday cake. And this was the first time this child had ever had anything other than the vegetables and fruits and grains that his parents gave him for his meals. They gave him a chunk of his birthday cake with all this sticky icing on top. And he put his fingers in and he kind of looked at it, looked at both hands and shook his head, which was very, very cute. And so they offered him a cookie. Nope, he didn't want that either. They offered him broccoli, and he gobbled up. He took that piece of broccoli and took some more. That was familiar to him. It was just adorable.
If we're having trouble reading our own signals, how can we read our children's signals in terms of what they need on a daily basis, besides looking at the labels?
You mean for food?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, I think children tell you what they need. If you learn to watch them, they are very clear about their signals, I think. And this is one of the things we've learned, that if we can teach parents to watch their babies and pick up on their signals, they know how to parent that baby.
So when it comes to food, you offer a variety of things and see what they need or want.
And you have to offer repeatedly, without pressure. When you introduce a new flavor or texture, you may have to present that 15 times before your child even tries it, and then many more times before they make this adjustment to the new food. So with your grandson, he was basically being presented with a new flavor and texture. And if you really were dying to have him get used to eating cupcakes, you'd have to do it a number of times. So the problem is, if you're not ready for that, you know, the third or fourth time, you start getting frustrated and worried that they're never going to eat what's good for them. And so then when you're presenting the food with them, you do it with this edge or with this fear or with this frustration. And then that gets associated for the child with that food. And, you know, so many parents already have this worry that my child will never like to eat the things that are good for them, that comes across, I think, along the way of that really, that long period of presenting and repeating and trying before a child adjusts to a new flavor and texture.
And I think if you show a baby that you'll eat it, then they'll imitate you.
We'll take a short break now and be right back to finish our discussion on developmental touch points.
For an audio CD of any parent's perspective show, send a check or money order for $15 with your name, mailing address, and phone number to Parents Perspective, P.O. Box 42283, Washington, D.C. 20015.
Welcome back to Parents Perspective. We're talking with Dr. T. Barry Brazelton and Dr. Joshua D. Sparrow about developmental touch points. We wanted to ask you about what you're advocating for now on behalf of parents.
Well, I think we're advocating for better conditions for parents, less poverty, better schools, better early childhood head start, better conditions for their children when they have to work, more supports around them, things like that. Healthy pregnancies, healthy deliveries.
Now, how do you work for this?
Yeah, I would add that one of the most important things that I think we all must advocate for is longer and paid for parental leave. The United States is the only wealthy industrialized democracy that still has unpaid parental leave, and we are also the country in that group of 27 with the shortest parental leave. And now we know that women who work all the way until the end of their pregnancy have a higher risk of premature delivery and low birth weight babies. And that ends up costing our society a lot. And I think we could probably fund some of the parental leave with the money we would save on full-term pregnancies and healthier weight babies. The other thing that we know is that overwhelming stress during pregnancy actually affects fetal brain development, and that the effects of overwhelming stress on fetal brain development now have been shown to play out at least all the way through those fetuses' adolescence in terms of an increased risk for attention deficit hyperactivity disorder and learning disabilities, among other things. So again, I think that if we invested in paid parental leave with enough time to be able to take some time off, at least in the last trimester, we'd have healthier babies with healthier brains that would bring savings for our society in terms of special education all the way down the road. The second thing, as Dr. Brazelton was saying, that I think is really critical for us to advocate for is high-quality early childhood education, because we know in most families, parents have to work, and yet we haven't really figured out how to fill in the gaps that are left, but we know what quality means in early childhood education, and we know how to produce it. It costs money, but there have been lots and lots of studies that have shown that for every dollar invested in quality education in the first years, we would be saving at least $7, and some studies estimate up to $17 as a return on investment per dollar. The other thing, and this could go in terms of this, but the other thing that I think is often left out is children's environmental health. We now know that pollutants in the air and the water adversely affect, again, fetal brain development and other aspects of development, as well as child health, so that we now can trace increases in asthma and obesity, as well as certain mental health problems, to exposure even before children are born, when they're still in the womb, to certain environmental pollutants. So allowing our air and our water to be dirtied and then paying the price later in terms of special education and health costs just doesn't really make any sense at all. And then I suppose the final thing is responsible media. I think we now have media for children that really put a wedge between children and their parents. There was a TV show, I don't know if it's still on, because this has been going on for a while now, called Fairly Odd Parents.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, no.
I never heard that one.
Yeah, Fairly Odd Parents. It was a cartoon. But then even the Rugrats, if you look at that show, the way parents are portrayed is as remote, distant, out of touch. They don't get it. They're kind of useless. You hardly ever see the parents' face. They're usually shot from the knee down and usually from the back. And so you get the sense that kids are really, you know, all by themselves, can't really turn to their parents for guidance or advice or for feeling close and connected. And you ask, why is there this preponderance of messages for children, never mind the other things that we worry about in the media? Well, I think it's if you undermine parents' authority by giving kids lots of these messages on the media, it's much easier to put in corporate authority about what you should be buying and what you should be eating. So this is another, I think, pretty important thing that I think we need to be advocating for, is healthy media for children and media literacy.
And some control over the hours that they're exposed to the media?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Well, that, you know, I totally agree with that, but it does put all the burden on parents, and I really don't understand why it all has to be up to parents, and the media can then go on and sort of put whatever they think is going to sell on the airwaves or on the internet. Why isn't there some responsibility on that end too?
Well, speaking of responsibility, unfortunately, we have to close, which is really a shame, because I know there's lots more to say and lots more to learn from you both. But in addition to the second edition of Touchpoints, which is very exciting, what resources do you suggest for our listeners who want to further pursue some of the issues we've been discussing?
Well, I think the first resource would be your baby and your child.
Yeah.
to sort of settle in and watch and listen and hang out.
Yeah, this is what I would suggest, that parents learn right from the first, how to watch their child, how to trust themselves, how to look within how they feel about the child, and to constantly ask themselves, what is that child trying to tell me? And really learn from the child and from within.
I think the next resource probably would be relatives, family members, and friends, because they are where you are, and they are also trying to figure out the same set of challenges and opportunities that you are, and to compare notes with them. And I think it makes the job of parenting a whole lot easier when you feel like you're not doing it alone, so that to get connected to other parents can really make a big difference. And then if you have to read something, you may feel more confident that you can trust your own instincts and your own local community to guide you as to what you're going to take and what you're going to reject.
Parents learn so much from each other that learning as a community becomes an opportunity for learning how other people did, what mistakes they made, how I can learn from their mistakes. One thing I think parents need to understand is that making a mistake is an opportunity. Every time you make a mistake, you go back and try something else, and then you come back and try something. So every mistake gives you a chance to try three or four different things. So a mistake is something that gives you an opportunity for learn how to be successful.
So trial and error is still valuable in parenting.
Mm-hmm. And that we all do it.
Yeah.
One parent by himself doesn't have to think I'm the only person that ever did this and I'm terrible.
That's right.
And then the other thing that I would just mention is, since we talked about eating and sleeping, the Brazelton Way series actually has one book on toilet training, another book on sleeping, another book on feeding, as well as four others. And I think my favorite one actually is on discipline.
And we've discussed those with you on earlier shows.
Well, this has been a wonderful experience. Obviously, we've learned so much and our listeners have learned so much, as usual, from both of you. So Dr. T-Berry Brazelton and Dr. Joshua Sparrow, thank you for being with us again on Parents' Perspective.
Well, it's great to be here again.
Thank you for having us.
Our gift for our first caller is an autographed copy of our book, Raising a Successful Child, Discover and Nurture Your Child's Talents. Just call us toll-free at 1-800-791-8573 with your name and mailing address. That's 1-800-791-8573 with your name and mailing address. And please spell anything that's not obvious. That's a big help to us. Mention show number 438 and tell us, if you can, what station you're listening to.
Visit our website, www.parentsperspective.org, where you can even listen to a show of your choice. This is Sandy Burt and Linda Perlis. We're glad you could share Parents' Perspective. Today's program was made possible with generous support from our listeners. Our sound engineer is Clayton Turner. Music for this program was composed and performed by Jonathan Burt.